What does motion sound like? With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
Out front next, Ian making landfall again. The deadly hurricanes, punishing winds and devastating storm surge causing extensive damage along the U.S. coast. Piers are destroyed, homes flooded. The threat of flash flooding is very real at this hour. Plus, the utter destruction in Florida. The death toll now rising. It is now 42. This time last night, it was only 17. 42 and still a lot unknown. We're going to take you to one of the hardest hit areas where almost an entire island was decimated. And her rescue during the hurricane made headlines. A nurse desperately trying to get to work was caught in the rising floodwaters. Thankfully, a nearby reporter was there, saw her, and saved her. And that nurse is my guest tonight. Let's go out front. And good evening. I'm Erin Burnett. Out front tonight, Ian's Fury. It still remains an extremely dangerous storm making its way through the Carolinas tonight. Let me just show you this powerful video showing a pier in North Myrtle Beach torn into pieces as the hurricane came ashore. The storm surge is ripping through neighborhoods like the ones I'm showing you here, leaving even more destruction of homes in its wake. Even these homes built up on sticks, so many of them deeply damaged. And parts of Charleston's historic downtown also underwater. And tonight there is still concern for life-threatening floods as the storm could dump up to 12 inches of rain as it moves north. Meanwhile, in Florida, the death toll rising and sharply rising to 42, more than doubling the known death toll in 24 hours. And we still don't have a complete picture of the damage Ian inflicted, because the reality of the situation is that some of those barrier islands and neighborhoods are still completely cut off. What we have been able to see is devastating. Neighborhoods obliterated. We've been able to send drones up to get a view as much as we can. Let me show you drone footage that we have here at CNN that we took from Fort Myers Beach. Boats piled up in backyards, RV parks just gone. Our Bill Weir spent the day there. 90% of the town, he says, no longer exists. And that's what officials say as well. And not far from there, Sanibel Island. On the left is what the area looked like before the hurricane. So just take a moment to pause on that. And then look at the right. The scene tonight, this looks like it burned through. Now, the before and after images are hard to even look at, but they do tell the story. They force us to see it. So let me show you another. This is a beach resort before and then after. Utter destruction, decimation. Scenes that are repeated along Florida's west coast, where street after street are filled with rubble, those piled up boats, and even now, power and cell phone lines are down. Rescues are still underway. The Coast Guard, we'll show you here, seen rescuing a man stranded in his boat. The Coast Guard alone says it saved the lives of more than 275 people since yesterday, right? So when you would have thought the storm was sort of leaving, then these rescues began, and they're still doing that. We have a team of reporters standing by. I want to begin with Miguel Marquez. He is out front in Pawleys Island, South Carolina, to begin our coverage. And Miguel, what are you seeing on the ground tonight there?
Yeah, this is just some of the damage. And keep in mind, it came on as a Category 1 hurricane here just south of where we are. But this is some of the damage that it still caused. This was a massive pier that locals here on Pawleys Island used to fish off of and love. I'm going to show you the pier itself, what's left of it. About half of that pier is now gone. We drove up from Charleston and saw lots of emergency vehicles and roads blocked off, lots of tree damage, trees over lines, over electrical lines. The whole area is really battered to a large degree from this storm, even though it was only a Category 1. And they are used to storms here in South Carolina. But because of the damage in Florida, people were really paying attention. There were no evacuation orders here, but we did not see a lot of people out in Charleston. We have no reports of anybody injured or killed up in this area. It is amazing. We've met people who were on the beach and staying here on vacation. They survived. All 10 members of their family survived. So, you know, as bad as it is here, it is nothing like what happened in Florida. And people here are thankful despite the damage here tonight. Aaron?
All right, Miguel, thank you very much. As Miguel says, despite the damage, just look at those images that there's up while Miguel is there. I mean, the damage is incredible. This is massive damage. And this is where, as he points out, I mean, Florida had it much worse. This is still devastating, just in that pier alone that he was showing you, and also this other destruction, these neighborhoods with the flooding and the surge. I want to bring in Brandon Ellis now, Director of Emergency Services for Georgetown County, South Carolina. And you heard Miguel. He's in your county on Pawleys Island. He was talking about that pier. We saw some of those images of total destruction. What more can you tell me about the damage so far?
Yeah, good evening. Obviously, we've experienced catastrophic storm surge. Ian brought in storm surge in excess of 4 feet. We've had similar storms before, so it's not unique to us, but this one just it kept pounding our coastline for hours and hours on end. So we've experienced, you know, major damage along Pawleys Island, the causeways leading there onto it, as well as on Garden City Beach, just north of there. We've got reports of, you know, very similar damage there as well. So lots of folks whose homes have been, you know, experienced flooding from storm surge. Yeah. We've got infrastructure damage to roadways and accessibility issues at this hour.
Well, and as you say, there's so many things that contribute to a storm being truly terrible. And it's not just the category rating. It's how long, and your point that it lasted, that storm surge was just relentless and pounding the coastline. Miguel showed that pier on Pawleys Island. Brendan, I know there's a lot of debris in the area. Are you worried at this point about more structures collapsing? I guess in part because of what you just said, which was the long duration of the storm.
Yeah, the water started to recede now. We've completed all of our rescues, so we'll start our damage assessment process. So that'll give us a really good idea of, you know, the extent of the damage, what the status of many of the structures that were impacted are. That process will initiate tomorrow at first light. Specifically on Pawleys Island, the causeways have been closed this evening, so no one will be allowed on the island until it is cleared tomorrow morning and ensured that it's safe.
I know you mentioned rescues. Look, the numbers out of Florida are horrible. I think to give people a moment to reflect here. 24 hours ago, we heard there were 17 dead. Now we hear there's 42, and there's still a lot of places they haven't been able to get to. That number is likely going to go up, and that is a terrible death toll, a loss of life. I know you have not seen loss of life. What have you been able to figure out where everyone is? Have you been able to complete any rescues needed?
All of our rescues that have been requested or reported to us have been completed at this hour. So no one's left pending in that regard. We were able to access everyone through our technical rescue team and our high water vehicles. So those assets were extremely beneficial to get in and get those folks who needed assistance. So right now we have no pending rescues, and we really have no reported major injuries or fatalities. Thankfully.
Do you think people behave differently because of the images and the destruction they saw in Florida from the storm?
Absolutely. I think folks took this a lot more seriously, even though it was only a Category 1 storm, as a lot of people viewed it. We tend to not focus on the category, and we preach that in our public preparedness events. You know, at category of storm doesn't matter. We focus on the impacts, and this storm is a prime example of that. The storm surge can be just as catastrophic, if not more catastrophic, than wind damage, which is really the only thing that drives the category of the storm.
That's an important point in one that millions of people have now learned. Brandon, thank you very much. I appreciate your time tonight.
Thank you.
And I want to go to Jennifer Gray in the CNN Weather Center. And Jennifer, to Brandon's point, you, in a sense, the category is less important than the water and the duration and all these things that make a storm so devastating and life-threatening. And I understand there's still a lot of potential out there from this storm. Its mass, its slowness. What happens next?
Right. And you're right. That's very true. We can't look at the category. You really need to focus on the impacts. And that's what we try to communicate leading up to these storms. With this storm, it was definitely the surge and the rain. And that was still true when it made its way to portions of the South Carolina coastline. Of course, not as much as we saw in Southwest Florida, of course, but still saw surge and third highest storm surge we've ever seen across Myrtle Beach. And now we're seeing rain pushing inland. So we are going to have a rainy period over the next 24 hours or so, clearing up along the coast, of course. It's still going to be breezy, but that surge is already coming down, which is good news, and that will continue to be the case. Most of the water has already pushed out. There is a tornado watch until 10 o'clock this evening, where we could see tornadoes, brief spin-ups as this storm continues to push on shore. But here's the radar looking forward, and you can see across the mid-Atlantic up into the northeast, we're still going to get a lot of moisture and some rain from this storm. So we are going to see some torrential downpours over the next 24 hours or so, especially across the mid-Atlantic and the northeast. Look at the I-95 corridor right there. Could pick up 2 to 4 inches of rain. And then, of course, portions of West Virginia, where we have some higher terrain here, we could be looking at the potential for some flash flooding here and there. So can't let your guard down just yet, even though Ian is now post-tropical, moving inland and starting to wrap up, Aaron.
All right. Thank you very much. Thanks. And next, one of the hardest hit towns, Fort Myers. Utter destruction. The boats just tossed in piles into mangroves, blocks in. Well, our Bill Weir spent the entire day there, and you're going to see the powerful images of what he experienced. That report is next. And we're going to take you inside the effort to rescue those who are still trapped right now, still trapped in the floodwaters. And Putin celebrating what the West says is an illegal land grab. Already, though, he is suffering a humiliating defeat on what he now defines as his own territory. We are live in a Ukrainian region that Putin says is his. Tonight, new CNN drone footage showing the complete destruction in Fort Myers. You see debris everywhere, cars thrown around. And it comes as CNN obtains audio of one woman who was trapped for several hours before she was rescued. Listen to this.
I'm up to my neck in water.
Okay. All right.
I'm so cold.
Obi, I'm losing you. I can't hear you.
I love you.
I love you.
I play that because that story had a happy ending. That woman is safe tonight, we can confirm. She does tell CNN she's still in shock. I mean, now picking up the pieces, she's lost absolutely everything she had, although blessed to have her life. Bill Weir is out front. He's live from Fort Myers. Bill, you have been to see some unimaginable things in the past 24 hours. And the people who rode out this storm where you are tonight went through some, you know, indescribable trauma. What did you see today when you finally were able to get to areas that nobody's been able to see since the storm hit?
Well, we weren't actually able to get to Fort Myers Beach, Aaron. The sheriff's department's not letting folks in there unless you live in there. We've heard reports that 90% of that community has been wiped away. So we did stop where we could. And as you were saying earlier in the show, everywhere you look along this stretch of the coast, there is something else that will put your jaw on the floor. Here's a little sample. These are shorebirds and pelicans walking across wreckage in what used to be San Carlos Harbor. It's seen better days, as you can see. This is the destructive path of Ian. It came raking across here. A lot of the businesses here, of course, have to do with recreation here in Paradise. Kayak rentals, bait shops, completely split open by the wind. But what's most striking about this particular spot is the boats that have been tossed into the mangroves across the street here. We have a bit of a bottleneck of human activity because this is the road to Fort Myers Beach. And the sheriff's department is not letting anybody on. If you haven't seen any pictures of Fort Myers Beach, this is why. There is a first informer law in Florida that's supposed to give us access when there's a state of emergency. But you got to feel for the sheriff's deputies just trying to manage the crowds here now that are piling in. You've got journalists, of course. You've got first responders. You have residents who are just curious who are coming by. And that's creating this huge pile. But this is what I wanted to show you. This is across San Carlos Boulevard. And just get a load of this. Just wanton, indiscriminate destruction. I think about how a family saves up their whole life to buy a boat. Or if you're a fisherman, you dream of being a captain one day, and how perilous that is even in a good year sometimes. But now, what this will do to the maritime businesses around here, the insurance, the marine insurance companies that will have to deal with the aftermath of this. And this is what I really wanted to show you guys. Look at this. I will always remember the sight of Captain Greg's boat, the Cracker Jack, which is now parked on top of this Chevy Suburban. You can hear the alarm going off inside the boat to alert the captain that something's wrong. It's heartbreaking in this setting. And then you've got laundry baskets up in the mangroves there, another bait shop over here. And then you find stuff like this. Look at this. Just a random, this is a Nicholas Roulin's MGM rewards card. Just set down there by the most violent storm to hit this part of the coast in history. And meanwhile, over here, you have the beeping of earth movers as they try to shove these grounded sailboats out of the way. As we learned in Irma and Maria, cleanup can be as much of a man-made disaster as the hurricane itself, if not properly managed. But we can only hope that all available resources will manage to unjumble this mess as soon as possible for these poor folks. There is a real estate evaluation company called CoreLogic. Today they put out a study that losses from this storm could be between $28 and $47 billion. For perspective, Katrina was a $65 billion storm, Aaron. But those sort of numbers really seem callous when you think about the human lives, that count that keeps going up, and the fact that in these, a lot of these boats were homes for people. A lot of people lived on their boats. We've heard stories of you know, fellow yachters trying to convince people to take shelter as the storm was coming. So it's a grim thought that we don't know if anybody perished and is in these vessels. And so it's heartbreaking at every turn. Aaron?
So can I just ask you a question about that, Bill? Because, you know, last night, and I know last night, you know, you were in Sanibel, you were trying to get back with the, you know, the horror of what you had seen. But at this time last night, we were told of a death toll of 17. And we were expecting it would go up, but the context was sort of everything has been seen by someone. There wasn't this feeling that it was going to go up dramatically. And yet here we are tonight at 42, and it's very clear from what you're saying and what you're showing us that that number could go higher. It could go much higher. We just don't know. I mean, what is your feel as you go around?
Yeah, at Governor DeSantis' press conference today, I'm not sure the official who came in, I was listening to it, he talked about that there are three phases to search and rescue. The first one is cursory, which is what we did yesterday on Sanibel, which is you drive around in a boat and go, is there anybody here who needs help? And those who are willing to go, I'm up in my bedroom, as we saw, you know, you can attend to them. But for folks who can't call for that, there are two other searches. One comes through and goes door to door, and you've seen it storm after storm, or they'll put an X code on the door to say that this one's been checked, and then somebody goes in again. So there's three checks for proof of life. And given the scope of the disaster zone, Aaron, that's going to take a long, long time.
And you've been talking to people there, even where you are right now, you talk about people trying to drive in to see their homes, right? Residents in that capacity, residents who are at the destruction itself. What are they telling you right now?
Well, now is, you know, I've seen this on storms past, that you go through these waves where people got through it and there's sort of an exhilaration and the sun comes out. And then it's sort of like the five stages of grief you go through as you realize the enormity of it. The depression sets in. You don't know what to do. So a lot of people are just sort of trying to organize their thoughts about what to do next. And I've seen some amazing, you know, neighborly behavior. There's not a working stoplight between here and, you know, for another, I don't know how many miles, people are taking turns and being respectful of each other, looking out for each other. As this drags on, that's the real test of the fabric of a community. But we have a bunch more stuff today that we weren't able to capture all. We've got more for you in the next hour. But Aaron, everywhere you look, it's just enormous human stories at every level.
Well, Bill, thank you so much. We're so lucky to have you there telling them. Thank you.
You bet.
And Bill, talking about the rescues and how that happens, he was explaining the step by step. So we're going to take you inside missions that are still underway to rescue people who are trapped even now after the hurricane tore through Florida. Plus the story that made headlines of a nurse trying to get to work during Hurricane Ian. She was trapped in rising floodwaters, but thankfully a television reporter was nearby and saw her and helped. And that nurse will tell her story out front next. Tonight, Ian moving inland through the Carolinas. Right now, the winds are still up to 70 miles an hour. It is now technically considered a post-tropical cyclone. Cities across Florida have been left underwater and are just barely even beginning the first steps of any sort of a recovery, if that's even the appropriate word this time. First responders and Good Samaritans across the state are still carrying out heroic rescues to save people who are still stranded. These five sheriff deputies that you see here were forming a human chain to rescue a woman whose car was swept away. Carlos Suarez is out front in Northport, Florida, where officials have spent the day evacuating people. Carlos, what have you been seeing there on the ground?
Well, Aaron, these rescues are still taking place at this hour. Soldiers with the U.S. Army are working with folks that just live in this area to get a hold of people that have been stranded in their homes for days now. In fact, one of these boats just pulled up a few minutes ago. A family got out. They had their belongings with them, a few pieces of luggage. They had their two cats with them. There's another family just off to the side that's been waiting for 3 hours for someone to be able to try to check on their loved ones. What you're looking at here is what they've been doing the entire day. No sooner do one of these boats come in when the word is you guys got to go right back out. They're just going down the street. They'll make a left. They go down another block. They'll grab whatever family, whatever group of people need to get out of their homes. We talked to a number of individuals earlier today, including one couple that said they've been stranded in their home for 2 days now. Another person told us they've also been waiting for hours to get out of their homes. The flooding out here is not expected to get better anytime soon. The water levels, the flooding, were not expected to recede until at the earliest tomorrow. Here's what these folks told us.
Flooding was insane. Trees torn everywhere. Nothing looks visibly remotely the same as it used to be before the storm.
There are a lot of trees down, a lot of people that are stuck in their homes. And from what 911 said, we've got houses that are covered with water. So I'm just glad we made it out.
My grandparents are still at the house. We have animals there. They don't want to leave the animals. So whenever we left on the boat, it was just a scary feeling. Like, you don't know if you're ever going to see them again, if you're going to see your house again, your animals again. So that's why I'm a little shooken up. It's just, you never know what you're going to come back to.
Aaron, the Red Cross is on the scene and is helping to find some of these folks a shelter, and we're expecting that these rescues will go out well into the night.
Carlos, thank you very much from Northport. Kelsey Smith is with me now. She was on Sanibel Island throughout the hurricane. She rode it out there, obviously one of the hardest hit areas in the entire state. And Kelsey, I'm so glad that you are safe. When the hurricane made landfall, I know you were sheltering inside a three-story building. We've seen the images of Sanibel now and the utter devastation. What was it like when the storm hit?
It was awful. There are no words for what that was like. We thought we'd be okay in a three-story building. We ended up being safe, but it did flood to the second story. The house began to move. The roof began to rip off. The shingles from other houses were ripping off. All three vehicles were flooded out front, trucks that had water over the top of them. At one point, we had to question how we would get out of the house. If the roof were to tear, how we would swim. And again, there are.
I mean, Kelsey, you must have thought that at a time that you weren't going to make it.
Absolutely. And at the same time, we were getting random signal and text messages would come through of people who were also lost or trapped. A friend of mine had lost her grandmother and her two dogs. And those reports were coming in at the same time we were facing that same situation, or could have been facing that same situation. And it was terrifying.
I mean, truly, you talk about your friend's grandmother. I know that when you were talking to a producer earlier today, you talked about a man in Sanibel that you came across, his brother had died. Look, we understand, Kelsey, that 42 people are confirmed dead in the state. I mean, that is an unbelievably high number. You know, we're talking about Florida, the United States in the year 2022. And yet it seems like when you look at places like Sanibel, where they haven't been able to go door to door, that number could go a lot higher. Do you think that's possible based on what you've experienced?
Absolutely. When we were standing on Periwinkle, it was completely unrecognizable. Devastation that happened on Sanibel. If you weren't prepared or you were staying and sheltering in a one-story ground floor home, you were facing death. And there was a lot of people who had to face that.
Kelsey, when we look at the Sanibel before and after, I know you've had a chance to walk around a bit. I know it's impossible for you to wrap your mind around what you went through, and you'll be reliving this for the rest of your life. What are you going to do now?
Good question. You know, we are staying with friends who have an extra room for the three of us. We are kind of all gathering here. There's been a lot of gas and water and food dropped off by friends and family, and then also by complete strangers. We plan on taking it day by day at this point. My partner lost everything, his boat, his truck, his house. My house was on stilts, and I did not lose everything. My vehicle was parked on a loading dock at the grocery store, and it made it through the storm. The police ended up taking it to use it for the island. It was one of the only vehicles in service. So that is a heavy question. And there is no plan at this point. It is just to continue to survive and be grateful that we are alive.
Kelsey, thank you so much for telling your
story.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And next I'm going to speak to a nurse, and let me show it to you, her, in this video. This is what happened. She was on her way to work during Hurricane Ian. A nurse, trauma. She wanted to get there to help people. She became trapped. She could have died, but she was saved by the person in that picture who happened to be a reporter. Plus, Putin's war entering a new and extremely dangerous phase for the world tonight. The Russian president now claims control over four provinces that are part of Ukraine. They don't belong to Russia, but he says they do. Tonight, though, Putin may be at risk already of losing one of those regions in his war. Tonight, stunning video out of Orlando. It shows dozens of homes and streets still submerged underwater. The floodwaters are expected to not even begin receding until possibly tomorrow. Officials warning residents it could be days before that water fully recedes. And as those floodwaters came in, there were tragedies and of course, emergencies. I mean, look at this nurse. She was rescued after her car was caught as the floodwaters suddenly rose. She was an essential worker trying to drive to the treatment center where she works in the midst of the hurricane to help others. A reporter from CNN affiliate WESH intervened and saved her. You can see him there carrying her on his back. The water, as you see, at certain places up to his waist and mid-thigh. If you look closely, you see he's also carrying her purse. And tonight, the nurse you see being rescued in that video is out front. Tanya McCullough joins me now. And Tanya, wow, I'm so glad to see you. You know, when you realized you were stuck in floodwaters, I mean, I'm presuming at one point you thought you could drive through it, and then suddenly you realize, and it's pitch dark, and you realize you might die, and then you see this person. Tell me how this happened.
As I realized that I was going deeper into the water, and I was trying to reverse the car, trying to get out, the car kept going further into the water. So I just stopped and I was trying to decide, what do I do? How do I get out of this situation? And I saw Tony peek around the corner because they saw the water moving and that they realized there was a car stuck in the water. I waved to him and yelled, help. And he said, okay, I'm coming, and went to go do something and then came back and walked through the water and just as calm as could be and asked me to release my seatbelt, climb out of the window, and get on his back, and that he would carry me to safety.
So you mentioned Tony, and his name is Tony Atkins, the reporter. After rescuing, the water's there. He pours the water out of his boots. Tanya, you talk about how calm he was. That he said, okay, unfasten your seatbelt, step by step. And sometimes in moments of incredible fear and trauma, a calmness can take over. What would you have done if he hadn't been there?
Girl, I keep asking myself that. What would I have done? Because the fact that he was there, I know that was God, because it was dark. There was no police cars or ambulance or fire trucks. There was no one else around to help me at that moment. And he was available immediately. Mm. So the fear hadn't set in to where I started to panic.
Right.
Because he was there immediately to help me out.
And I know you were reunited him in the day today. You saw him.
Yes.
What did you say to him? We're showing the picture now of you and Tony this morning. What did you say?
It was so emotional to see him because I did not get the opportunity to express my thanks and gratefulness and let him know he was my hero, my champion, my knight in shining armor. And how grateful I was and how much I really appreciate him taking the time, not ignoring me, not running away, pretending like he didn't see me, and just let me fend for myself. He immediately came to my rescue.
After you were rescued, Tanya, I want everyone to know, you then walked a mile and a half. And you went to work.
I did.
You went to work and you worked a 16-hour shift. And I find that unbelievable. I find that to just be so incredible and powerful and profound. But you don't have a car. Your car doesn't work. Where you work, the care center you work for, is an hour away. So what do you do now?
Mm-hmm. Right now, I'm just going to have to wait and trust God to figure out how I'm going to get transportation since I have none. And until I can find transportation, then I will be at home waiting until I can figure out how to get a car.
Well, Tanya,
so right now I'm unemployed.
Right now they're not going to pay you, is what you're saying?
Right. So
you're immediately unemployed and not being paid because you can't get there.
I can't get there unless I'm working. That's the only way I'm getting paid.
Well, that's awful.
So
I hope that changes, because that's awful. Someone who goes through the night and walks a mile and a half and works a 16-hour shift deserves more. Tanya, thank you. Please, we'll stay in touch, and thank you.
Thanks for having me.
And next, Putin. He is celebrating the illegal land grab. There is a stunning counterattack by Ukraine on what he now defines as Russian territory tonight. And Biden calling the leaks of the two Russian pipelines a deliberate act of sabotage tonight. Our other big story tonight, Ukraine announcing a major victory against Russian forces inside an area that Putin just hours ago claimed as part of the country of Russia, formerly annexed it. Ukraine says it has just regained control of the village of Drobyshev as Ukrainian forces appear on the verge of retaking the long Russian-occupied city of Lyman in Donetsk. These places and this war are being waged just hours after Putin proclaimed the annexation of about 20% of Ukraine. Leaders around the world blasting the move, which was based on a sham vote. And it comes as a defiant Putin tonight held a concert in Red Square to celebrate his announcement and annexation. He slammed the West and claimed, quote, victory will be ours. Our Nick Peyton Walsh is out front in Kramatorsk. And Nick, you are standing in what Putin now defines as Russia, even though, of course, it's Ukraine. But he says, annexed it. And this could be a huge change in this war.
Yeah, look, extraordinary scenes in Moscow today. A real bid by Putin to suggest victory could be something Russia might actually see, despite enormous internal dissent at his partial mobilization and a continuously faltering campaign on the battlefield. Here, he suggested a ceasefire, diplomacy, things, frankly, Ukraine are never going to accept, given they're seeing progress here and don't trust Russia as an earnest partner at the negotiating table. He held out the possibility of the nuclear threat, not direct, but in the background in his speech. And frankly, the key takeaway here is the fact that he stood on the stage with four Moscow-appointed leaders of the occupied areas here in Ukraine, and they signed pieces of paper together. Hasn't changed what's been happening here today as he was standing there and over the past days, in which his Ukrainian forces moving forwards very purposefully and deliberately to try and encircle a key hub here, Lyman, where there are now thousands of Russian troops, some quite well equipped, some relatively advanced, potentially encircled. And we saw the road in direction towards that, how over the past weeks, how blistering and fast the Ukrainian advance has been.
Hidden but unstoppable. Ukraine's not bragged much about its march south from Kharkiv towards the prize of Donetsk, but every rooftop or tree line suggests they've just been too busy advancing. Day by day, reducing how much of occupied Ukraine Moscow has this day falsely declared Russian territory, with the ultimate goal, encircling the vital railway town of Lyman at hand. No quarter given, all the way through the forests to the monastery town of Svetogorsk.
The drive to this point, probably the most depressing 2 hours we spent on the road for the whole 6 months of this war, just laying bare the utter ferocity of the fighting and also to the speed of Ukraine's advance to this town, which itself is shocking. 8 years ago, at the start of the conflict, I lived on off here for 6 months and just learned to appreciate its normality, its peace amid all the pines here. And that's just gone.
It is the most fragile who remained when Russia moved in. Anna is one of 9 people left in her block. She almost didn't make it.
The scariest was when the Russians one night were in a firefight in my courtyard. I was in the doorway and tried to hold the steel door shut, but a soldier pulled at the door, so I jumped down and fell in the basement. He tore open the door, shot his gun into the darkness, and missed me.
Some seek survival in their god here, whose monastery looks down on the mess. Luba asks me if they'll come back. The Russians, they made such a mess of their new post office, she says. On her shirt, a lock of hair from her local beloved priest, killed by shelling in June. I attached it as a protective amulet, she says. Tell me, can I leave here now? Even the carcass of here, still rocked by shelling. But the church bells finally rang again 2 days ago. They brought Ludmilla to tears. It rang and I heard it, she says, and I listened and it got louder. They are now out of the church basement where they hid from the bombs and still try to live.
She's just saying it's cold down here and you can feel that. 7 months underground.
Anxious to not show their faces, their plight down here is their private tragedy, one says. Ludmilla's disabled son was injured in shelling and taken to hospital, she tells me. She last saw him alive, but that is all she knows down here. There is little salvation here, only ruin turning to rust. There is no let-up in Ukraine's advances, or of Moscow's imminent annexation, the absurd claim this land is now actually Russian territory. The land here, testimony to how the collision between this right and that wrong shred the very thing both covet.
Now, we're in this curious moment of escalation here where Vladimir Putin says, where I'm standing is Russia. It's not. That's nonsense. And therefore, the ceremony we've seen in Moscow is really belied by the reality of what's happening on the ground. And that leaves Putin with a very, very impossible task, frankly, to square what he's saying is happening, what is really happening. And the danger is how he chooses to try and bridge that gulf. Erin?
Nick, thank you very much from Kramatorsk tonight. And next, sabotage at sea. Are Putin's secret forces to blame as Biden accuses Putin tonight? Tonight, sabotage at sea. That's what President Biden is calling the leaks and explosions along the Nord Stream pipelines. The Russian gas lines are essential. They supply 35% of gas from Russia into Europe. They've been attacked. And Nick Robertson is out front.
Like a boiling cauldron, the busy Baltic Sea bursting with gas from ruptured Russian Nord Stream reinforced pipelines. More than an inch of steel coated in places in approximately 4 inches of concrete. Not easy to break.
These pipelines are only in about 200 feet or so of water, and Russia does have an undersea capability to that would easily lay explosive devices by those pipelines.
Denmark's foreign minister uncharacteristically cautious about Russian ships seen in the area days prior.
I don't want to go into speculation.
Unity among allies about not blaming Russia without evidence.
We're not going to get ahead of the investigation.
Danish and German warships deployed to secure the area. Norway putting its nearby energy infrastructure on heightened alert too, as Sweden begins an investigation. The Kremlin announcing its own preliminary investigation into possible international terrorism.
Here in Moscow, of course, many people say that we should look at who might benefit from this incident. And of course, they point at the United States, which might find it easier to sell its gas to Europe.
It could be weeks before European investigators get a close look, and the pipes that recently stopped sending gas to Europe may never be fixed.
There's no kind of turning back on the gas issues, and it's not then going to be possible for Europe to continue to build up its gas reserves for the winter.
But even before knowing if Russia's responsible, assessments of what it means are being made.
I do think it's a signal to Europe that Russia can reach beyond Ukraine's borders. So who knows what he might be planning next.
An emerging calculation. Putin is escalating ahead of proposing terms for peace.
He's now trying to exit the war in the same way that he entered it, with him being the person in charge and him framing the whole terms of any kind of negotiation.
And that's why the caution on calling Russia out. It's going to take global unity to get Putin to back down. Nick Robertson, CNN, London.
And thanks so much for joining us. AC360 begins now.
Quality sleep is essential, and that's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. So you can choose what's right for you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores. Sleep Number does that. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Now streaming exclusively on Max, a new CNN flash doc about the album that has Nashville talking, Call Me Country, Beyonce and Nashville's Renaissance. Watch it at max.com/callmecountry. Max subscription required.